Welcome to the DNA Talks podcast, where we take on the mission of unlocking the code of your genetics. This season is all about you, upgrading your health, not just on the surface, but down to the root cause. Join us as your clinicians at the DNA Company investigate your DNA and beyond. The intention of this podcast is to enhance your lifestyle by changing what is in your control. This does not substitute the medical advice given by your personal doctor, therapist, and other healthcare professionals. Welcome, everybody. So today we're going to respond to your call. There's something specific you asked for, so we're going to dive in. So there's no guest today because you very specifically said you would like a deeper dive on the genetics of Alzheimer's. And this is important because the genetics, quote unquote genetics, and the mainstream thought on what the genetics of Alzheimer's are is very different than what we believe. You may have seen a show on Netflix called Limitless, and it was with Chris Hemsworth, and it was a mini series with, you know, a few episodes of him challenging himself to do various things. And one of the things was to explore his longevity. And in that, he met with a doctor who did a genetic test and told him that because of the ApoE gene and a particular variant that he had, that he had an 8 to 10 times elevated risk of developing dementia. There's another version of that gene that, again, clinically tells people that they have a 17 to 25 times elevated risk of developing dementia. And if you saw Chris's reaction, he was gutted. He could look into the future and didn't see what he wanted to see. And as he started thinking about his family, his children, his wife, and not being able to play with them and not knowing who they are. These were the sort of visions that were going through his head. All I was thinking while I was watching it was, why aren't they telling him how to prevent it? He still doesn't even know what's causing it. His belief, he truly believes right now that it's just coming, that it's something that just happens, that there's a switch that you can turn on, and then all of a sudden dementia wakens up. So why aren't we born with it? Why don't 5-year-olds have dementia? Why don't 25-year-olds have dementia? Why does it happen later in life? Why doesn't everybody with that gene variant that Chris Hemsworth have develop dementia? Why are we told there's an 8 to 10 times risk, not 100% likelihood? The gene that was described has a particular job. And when you look into the job, you start to understand what's really going on. What's really going on is it's very implicit in the transport of lipids in your body. That means when your body is using cholesterol for whatever purpose, and we're going to get into that, this gene singularly determines how efficiently you transport that lipid or that cholesterol around. And if you have the bad version of the gene, you don't do such a good job. We haven't yet understood why that equals dementia. One of the big factors clinically, and this belief is slowly going out the window, which is why the genetics, quote unquote, are also going out the window. The big belief is that amyloid plaque, this development of plaque in the brain, is dementia. We now have new beliefs. In fact, the Canadian government, where I live, now refers to dementia as type 3 diabetes, a metabolic dysfunction. The plaque is no longer being blamed. The plaque is a byproduct and a more symptomatic way to look at it, but what's actually driving it? Cholesterol is a hormone that your body uses to fight inflammation. If you have inflammation in the brain, your body will use, just like it does in other parts of your body, cholesterol to fight it. If that cholesterol meets toxicity or there's metabolic dysfunction and the volume is aggressive, or you have the bad version of the ApoE3 gene and you don't transport lipids efficiently, you may end up depositing and building up this plaque that eventually leads to some measurable symptom that people then can call the early stages of cognitive decline. And warning bells go off. And that's why this gene is singularly pointed out as the Alzheimer's gene, because it determines if you have plaque in your brain or not. But we didn't yet answer why the plaque was sent there. Inflammation. We know that if you look at the majority of chronic conditions, they're all rooted in inflammation. And so if there was no inflammation, you could have the worst version of the ApoE3 gene, 4-4, the version that says you have a 17 to 25 times elevated risk of dementia versus the common population. You could have that version and never develop it if there's no inflammation to fight. A healthy brain, which means you had a maintenance plan and you did things right. Now, if you do those things right, and we're going to get into those things, inflammation never sets in, and there's never a need for ApoE to be a concern because your brain never received cholesterol as a coping mechanism for inflammation. So what then are we actually talking about here? We're talking about the root causes of inflammation in the brain and ApoE being a secondary consideration, not the primary. It's not step one. But when you research the body and biology, symptomatically, disease-centric, which is where most genetic research is done, then you're only going to look at it symptomatically and disease-centric, and you're going to only try to answer questions symptomatically and disease-centric, and you're only going to single out genes like ApoE, which are only measured at the time of the disease. There's plaque. There's dementia. Let's try and find that gene, because one day we'll make a drug for it, but we never answer the question of why somebody got sick. I was speaking to a gentleman named Dr. Tom O'Brien. We hosted a medical summit 2 years ago around the genetics of all conditions and chronic issues. And I interviewed about 40 people, medical professionals. One of those people was Dr. Tom O'Brien. And in that interview, and by the way, he's one of the leading people in the Institute for Functional Medicine, major thought leader. He's written some amazing books. He has a book that came out with Mark Hyman as well, as a co-author. And we talked about the brain. And he said, major, major misconception. He said, if you look at today's dementia, he believes 66%, nearly 70%, is inhalation-based, airborne. And he didn't mean that it's a virus. What he meant is that the pollution that we're breathing, the chemicals that we're breathing, the mold that we're breathing, are also potent in terms of causing inflammation of the brain, that you now have your root cause. And if you look at the genetics of that cascade, the glutathione cascade, and your ability to actually bind and clear from the lungs, some of us aren't doing so well. And if you take an anecdote, which he taught me, LA traffic, Los Angeles, major city, you try driving in LA traffic with your window down for an hour, it's equivalent to a pack of cigarettes in terms of its toxicity and inflammatory insult. And now do that day after day after day after day. And this is answering the very first question I pose of, why don't five-year-olds get dementia? The body is resilient. The body will fight back. And it takes years and years of exposure before the body loses the battle. The other thing that happens is once you get into your 30s, you start to deplete mitochondria. The brain has the second highest density of mitochondria in the body, which means that if you're depleting mitochondria at that age, the brain suffers a major outcome of that depletion because it has such a high density and is so dependent and reliant on that mitochondria. This is why you get brain fog, lack of energy. What is mitochondria? It's that powerhouse of the cell, right? It's where your energy comes from. So if you don't have it anymore, you can. It's like having a lower version of the same organ. Energetics are another consideration for chronic disease. And if you don't have that power source, do not expect that organ to function the same way. So now if you look at this perfect storm, I'm now at an age where my mitochondria is depleting. The brain is not the same. I'm now at an age where there's been wear and tear. There's been things that I breathe. There's been things that I eat. There's been stressors that I cause. And the hardware, the actual hardware of the brain, has been inflamed and damaged by those choices that I make. Then we look at metabolic health, another layer of insult. And you combine any one of these and you start to understand why the brain got inflamed. So let's go to, and why then there was that response of cholesterol. So now let's look at metabolic health. So many of us in the TCF7L2 pathway are not doing well. So the same food can cause a very different glycemic response in different people. And now if you have that response, that's suboptimal, you could be the person at the table that suffers an outcome, nefarious outcome, from the exact same problem that everybody else didn't Supper all come from? The daily desserts, the pasta, the bread. Grandma got dementia, but grandpa seems to be fine. What happened there? Their ability to manage starches, the AMY1 gene. Their ability to respond with insulin and mitigate the glycemic response could be variable and different. And this is why a lot of functional healthcare innovators now refer to dementia as a metabolic concern. And in treating dementia, you're seeing that it's food first. It's gut first. And it's not only the food triggering a glycemic response, it's also our food damaging the gut. There's a unique phenomenon where your gut can get into what we call a state of leaky gut. And a lot of you are familiar with this. What is that? You've been eating foods that are damaging the gut lining that eventually get to the point where the gut wall is permeable, literally has little micro holes. And that permeability allows toxic substrates that were meant to pass through your digestive tract and be filtered out before the nutrients enter your bloodstream, instead pass directly through that gut wall into the blood. They're now free-flowing, not broken down, not in the state that your body was designed to handle them in, and all of a sudden they're able to cross the blood-brain barrier. So your structure, that human body you walk around in, has a blood-brain barrier to prevent insults from entering the brain and causing damage, but it wasn't designed for these. The assumption is this didn't happen because cave people didn't get leaky gut. They ate the right foods, they were not toxic in nature, and they did not suffer gut wall permeability. And so the blood-brain barrier was never developed to protect us from those things. And this is another major cofactor to how diet can drive cognitive decline. The foods that you're eating that have toxins, plastics, preservatives, food colorings, all these possible combinations can cause dysbiosis of the gut, which leads to dysbiosis of what we then call leaky brain. You go from leaky gut to leaky brain and eventually brain inflammation. That's when APOE3 kicks in. At that point, you start to get that response of plaque, which eventually leads to a symptom which happens to correlate with the time that the brain is damaged enough. We start to experience cognitive decline, and all of a sudden it's looped in and blamed. The plaque is blamed, right? The plaque is your body trying to help you, but it's what gets blamed. There's another factor here. 80% of dementia cases are in women. So what do we do there? Why is this happening? Are women wired for dementia? Is it a women's problem? Or is there another root cause and source? The challenge is that 80% of the research dollars are spent on men. So the questions don't get answered properly. So when you have male research trying to solve female problems, the problem just doesn't get solved. And all of a sudden numbers look like this. 80% of dementia cases are in women. Grandma. It's a grandma problem. So what's happening? Women have a hormone cascade that is much more complex in terms of its outcome than it is for men. Same cascade. Progesterone converts to testosterone, converts to estrogen. There's different genes that drive that. And so the volume at which you fill each one of those buckets can be different for different people. But that's step one. Step two is once you've made your estrogens, your body has the choice from the CYP family of genes into which metabolite it's going to convert it into. So these CYP genes can either convert into 2-hydroxyestrogen, 4-hydroxyestrogen, or 16-hydroxyestrogen. And if you go down the 4 pathway, or even the 16, you're making a toxic insult. And you would think, well, why would the body even do that? Why would it even make a toxin? A lot of what we're doing that is problematic in today's reality was protective in an older reality that our body still thinks is our reality, including the APOE gene, what we're talking about. Why would there be a bad version where people don't transport lipids properly, where people get cholesterol problems because of this gene? How is that beneficial and why would our genes do that? Well, ancestrally, we did not commonly experience chronic inflammation the way we do today. We experienced a pretty clean, healthy life where we lived on a farm and we ate fresh food out of the ground, and it was your family around you and not much else. And you may have been close to a village where you were close to some other people. And once in a while, there would be an acute problem. There may have been a battle where you got cut with a blade. There may have been a hammer that fell on your foot. There may have been a massive fight that caused you stress. But it was seldom and infrequent. Today, it is constant. You wake up every day knowing there's going to be a stressor, given our culture and the way we live. So the people that did well actually were protected by what we now call the bad version of the APOE gene, because they had a great anti-inflammatory response to acute problems. Go into battle and get cut, and the body's ability to fight inflammation and resolve the issue allowed that person to survive because of this, what we now call the bad version of the APOE gene. So there's no such thing as good or bad. It's only context. And you now know that it's not a driver of disease. It's a driver of fighting inflammation. So this is exactly why you have to answer the question of context of what you're doing with the cards you've been dealt, the genetic cards you've been dealt. So again, ancestrally, it was protective. And now all of a sudden, it's problematic because our reality is different. Same thing is true of what we just said, that some women make toxic hormones. Well, they didn't make them in a context where they also took a birth control pill. And they also had endocrine disruption. They also had pesticides and also. So many things now mimic hormones as they enter your body, and the hormone receptors bind onto them and use them as hormones, which then increase the fuel of that estrogen toxicity. And so you get tipped over the edge. The body didn't know this is what you're living in, and the reality and the toxic soup that you've been exposed to. So we haven't changed, and we still make these toxic estrogens, but now to an extreme. And this is where you have to triangulate that the genes are centered around your environment, nutrition, and lifestyle choices. That combination is what equals your result. And so this toxic estrogen combined with our current reality, which is stressful, not enough sleep, so you're in oxidative stress, and most importantly, you're surrounded and bombarded with estrogen mimics all the time. You take that, and it's no surprise that women have this additional inflammatory insult to deal with and have much more dementia than men. And because this is not even a consideration in why dementia happens, there's no research around it. It's not medically plugged in. Talk to your doctor. They haven't heard this before. And of course, women would then suffer greatly. So now beyond all this, we start to think about, well, I now get it. It's not just a gene equals a disease. What Chris Hemsworth was told was a little off. There's some truth to it, but it's outdated in terms of its interpretation. If you're thinking disease-centric, the last step, which is I have a symptom, I have something that's measurably off in the blood, and then you're correlating a gene to that state, the state of the plaque is already there, then yes, genetics would point to APOE3. And you did a bad job of transporting lipids. And now the outcome is there's lipids in your brain. There's this plaque buildup. And you all of a sudden are causing cognitive decline. It would all make sense. But nowhere in there did we ever ask why the plaque was developed in the first place. We just think it happens. This gene causes it. It's bound to happen. Much higher risk. We now know that irrespective of the version of the gene, if there's no inflammation, that gene is not needed in this cascade. And so that's the thing we need to work on. The other area that is important is your stress. The constant trickle of cortisol, the constant trickle of inflammation based on the people you surround yourself by. There was a study that was done by Harvard. It's actually the longest ongoing health-related study the world has seen. It started in the 1930s and it still hasn't ended. It's still going on. And what they're trying to determine is what is that one single factor that speaks to human longevity, where if you do this one thing, you're going to live longer. So they've been studying people literally since the 1930s to see the centenarians, the people that are in their 90s, the people that are walking at 95 and not in a hospital bed at 65, what did they do different? And they concluded, the study's still going on, but as of now, this is their conclusion. The number one factor is the quality of their relationships. They said the less and more high quality relationships you can have, the longer you're going to live, because it's a constant. You eat a couple of times a day. You exercise a few times a week. You expose yourself to toxins intermittently. You have to deal with your hormones a few days a month. This is constant. You are constantly dealing with people. And based on those relationships and the toxicity of them, it can drive good hormones, bad hormones, health, or illness. And this is what they concluded. And why do I say this? Because it's a hidden factor to dementia. If you're constantly driving a stress response, and you're constantly stressed, and the brain is constantly stressed, you're going to be in a state of inflammation. Your immune system is going to be challenged. Certain factors that should have been suppressed and oppressed with your immune system are no longer being sort of mitigated. And so other things are able to then proliferate. Remember, you have to look at things functionally, meaning that, okay, stress causes this problem. But if you also have three other problems going on, the body is struggling so much that stress means even more. There's a total load that your body can handle. So if your immune system is also shot because of the stress relationships, then there's another place where your body is utilizing the energy that it could have utilized to solve this problem. So not only are you triggering your problem from the stress, but you're also less able to fight the problem because other problems are drawing on your energy. And energy is now spoken of as one of the key drivers or preventers of chronic disease. Bioenergetics is a whole new study of how to think about disease. And there's people that are treating disease just by regulating the energy of the cells. Because they're saying the only problem you have and the reason you got sick is not because you had a magic gene that equaled a disease. It's because your body's so overwhelmed with all these problems, you don't have enough energy for the cells to actually fight these problems. Too much is going on. And so the same thing is true here. And this is where relationships can create this cofactor, I should say, another thing you have to deal with. Now you take a step back and you apply all of what we talked about today in today's reality. Think about today's context. I'm going to wake up and I'm going to immediately be on my phone. And then I'm going to be stressed about emails. And I'm going to get in my car and I'm going to have EMF for my electric vehicle. And then I'm going to get out of the car and I'm going to walk into my office building. I'm going to breathe in chemicals from what they used to clean it last night. And then I'm going to go to lunch with somebody and I'm going to eat some seed oils and I'm going to eat some pesticides and glyphosates. And then I'm going to go walk down the street and stop in a cosmetic store to pick up some endocrine disrupting chemicals that disrupt my hormones. And then I'm going to go home and I'm going to fight with the kids because of a problem that they just won't fix. And I have to drive them to this class and that class. And it's just a constant helicopter lifestyle. And you start to add these things up. And then on top of that, you don't sleep. And the total cumulative load is too much. And now add on top of all of that, that we are living longer. Our ancestors didn't live to this age. They lived until 30s and 40s, not because of chronic disease, but more because of things like battle and viruses and bacteria and things that would just take their life. And so we're living longer, but we haven't understood that our brains need maintenance. And if you're planning to be 80 without ever considering how to maintain not only the software, but the hardware of your brain, the physical structure, then how do you expect to have the youth of your brain function at that age that you have today? How do you expect to avoid Alzheimer's dementia? It's one thing to say, I want to live to 120. It's another thing to actually be equipped to thrive at that age. And so you have to think about these things. It doesn't matter what your genetics say. We are living longer and we'll continue to do so likely. And so you need a maintenance plan very specifically for the brain. Standalone from everything else, it needs to be thought of differently. You also need to think about your heart. You also need to think about cancer. You need to think about all these factors that could change not your lifespan, but your health span. Living till 90, great. Without good health, nobody wants that. So consider all of what we talked about today. A lot of you have your genetic reports in hand and start to look at what are the factors that could potentially drive inflammation in the brain. And start to think about habits that could potentially mitigate. Start to think about the aha moments where I didn't even think that this was related to dementia. Now I understand. My brain, just like everything else, needs a maintenance plan. We need to understand what causes it, a toxic insult, what the blood-brain barrier cannot protect us from, what causes inflammation, and later on eventually leads to this plaque buildup, and eliminate all those things or supplement to protect myself from those things. Ideally, a combination of both. Start to think about things like sauna that are major upregulators of neurogenesis. Development of new neural pathways. Don't just maintain the old ones, let's build new ones. We used to believe scientifically that the brain cannot generate new cells, that you have what you have and you kill a brain cell and you're minus one now. No, we now know neurogenesis is real. You can develop new neural pathways. So you start to learn what those things are. Intense sauna routines, minimum 3-4 times a week. Pushing yourself in the gym with resistance training, lifting heavy things and signaling to your body, I'm still young, which upregulates your mitochondrial health, which again, there's high density in the brain. Taking the right supplements, like things that support brain-derived neurotrophic factor, whole fruit coffee extract, light movement like walking, yoga. If you look at areas where people are centenarians, blue zones, they constantly move their legs, they walk, but they're not walking on a treadmill. They're walking on uneven pavement. They're walking up and down the hills of Sardinia. So look at the habits of people that live to that age, and what you'll see is clean eating, low stress, high quality relationships, constant movement, and above all, you will consistently find a sense of purpose. People that live into their hundreds with a healthy brain never consider their age. What they consider is their purpose. And they approach it the same way they did at 101 as they did at 51. To them, nothing has changed. And that sense of purpose drives a signal to your brain because your thoughts will alter your health outcome. That sense of purpose drives to your brain your ability to stay young or get old really fast. So whatever you ask your brain for is what you'll get. And like I said, above all, you see this consistently with people that have incredible cognitive function as they age, that they have this intense sense of purpose and they work towards it on a daily basis. So with that, I hope I've changed your perspective on dementia, on Alzheimer's, what it really is, why it really happens, why it's so much actually in your control. Why genes are not your destiny, what more a warning or red flag, and a guide as to where to intervene. So your genes are not meant to tell you, you have risk, good luck. They are meant to tell you, here's your action plan, so it never happens. And if we have it, let's reverse it. And we've seen this over and over again. Last thing I'll tell you, if you want to understand this thinking a little bit more, there's a great book by Dr. Dale Bredesen. He's one of the pioneers of the belief that Alzheimer's is reversible, that Alzheimer's is preventable. And it's because of his great work that people even like us are able to think about the body differently and drive the thinking that we have. Thanks, guys, for listening. I hope this was helpful. We'll see you again.